Wow, that is making a joyful noise unto the Lord right there. That was awesome. Our next reading is from Isaiah chapter 65, verses 17 through 25. For I am about to create new heavens and a new earth. The former things shall not be remembered or come to mind. But be glad and rejoice forever in what I am creating. For I am about to create Jerusalem as a joy and its people as a delight. I will rejoice in Jerusalem and delight in my people. No more shall the sound of weeping be heard in it, or the cry of distress. No more shall there be in it an infant that lives but a few days, or an old person who does not live out a lifetime. For one who dies at 100 years will be considered a youth, and one who falls short of 100 will be considered accursed. They shall build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and eat their fruit. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For like the days of a tree shall the days of my people be, and my chosen shall long enjoy the work of their hands. They shall not labor in vain or bear children for calamity, for they shall be offspring blessed by the Lord, and their descendants as well. Before they call, I will answer. While they are yet speaking, I will hear. The wolf and the lamb shall feed together. The lion shall eat straw like the ox, but the serpent, its food shall be dust. They shall not hurt or destroy on all my holy mountain, said the Lord.
This morning's scripture, New Testament scripture, is from the Gospel of John, chapter 20, verses 1 through 18. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said to him, "They've taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Then Peter and the other disciple set out and went toward the tomb. The two were running together, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent down to look in and saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came, following him, and went into the tomb. He saw the linen wrappings lying there, and the cloth that had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen of wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the other disciple who reached the tomb first also went in, and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture, that he must rise from the dead. But the disciples returned to their homes. But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head and the other at the feet. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" And she said to them, "They've taken away my Lord, and I don't know where they've laid him." And when she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not know it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you looking for?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you've laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabuni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Do not hold on to me, because I have not yet ascended to the Father. But go to my brothers and say to them, I am ascending to the Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went and announced to the disciples, "I've seen the Lord." And she told them that he said these things to her. May God add his blessing and lend understanding to the reading of his word. John's account of the resurrection, it shares common themes with the other three gospels. And this is one thing that I keep highlighting. Year after year, women go to the grave first. Mark's account, which shows up on the scene first, says that three women, including Mary Magdalene, are there with spices to anoint Jesus' body. John's gospel lists only Mary Magdalene present, and the text doesn't say that anyone is with her or why she is there. But either way, all four gospel accounts have women being the first to go to the empty tomb. Women are the first to go out and tell others about it. And I'll spare you a much longer discourse on the subject. But every year I feel compelled to say it as a man, or someone who wants to be a man. I don't know. I still feel like a little kid most days. Why is it that some people are still trying to exclude women from ministry when God chose women to be the first witnesses of the empty tomb? Why are women denied ordination, even in this day, when all four gospels say that women were the first to share the good news, he is risen, including Mary Magdalene? Mary Magdalene is not everything that the legends say. There's no scripture to say that she was a prostitute once or any of that stuff. There's no evidence that she even had sex in the Bible, as far as anyone can tell. She was, according to Luke, she did have a problem where she was possessed by demons, and Jesus drove them out, and then she followed him for the rest of her life. She became an evangelist early in the church, just like Peter, just like Paul, and all the rest. So there, that's my little mini sermon on why women should be allowed to be ministers. Take it up with scripture if you don't like what I say. There's an expression we use when things are changing. We say it's a new day, it's a new day. Today is the first day of the rest of your life. And today is Resurrection Day, what we call Easter. This year I decided to explain some of the words we just so casually toss around in Christendom. On Maundy Thursday, I explained what Maundy meant. And just a quick definition of Maundy, it is a French version of the Latin word for mandate. During the Last Supper, Jesus told the disciples, "This commandment I give to you, love one another." And so that's his mandate. Put it in Latin, in the Vulgate translation, put it through French, and you come up with Maundy Thursday. So I've explained that one that we just throw around so casually. What about the name Easter? The word Easter does not appear anywhere in Scripture, and we have only one source that explains the origins of this name. It's a 7th and 8th century British monk named Bede, who, according to one source, here's a quote, he wrote the month in which English Christians were celebrating the resurrection of Jesus. It had been called Eastermanath in Old English. Eastermanath in Old English, referring to a goddess named Easter. And even though Christians had begun affirming the Christian meaning of the celebration, they continued to use the name of the goddess to designate the season. So Easter in Old English becomes Easter today. And it's using the name of a pagan god to describe the most holy day in the Christian church year. Maybe we ought to change the name to Resurrection Day, because that's what this is all about. Why is this day the holiest day of the church year? My apologies to Christmas. Love Christmas. Great songs. Big hits. But why is Easter the holiest day of the Christian year? In short, because it's Resurrection Day. This is the great Christian hope, resurrection of the dead and it's a new day when we can believe in the resurrection of the dead. Everyone in the Easter account is behaving in a natural manner. I mean, I always criticize the disciples and because they're just kind of bumbling idiots through most of the New Testament. Jesus is right there in front of them. He's telling them the truth, and they aren't getting it. They aren't understanding, and they fail to grasp. But I don't have any such judgment against the people on Easter morning. This is strange. This is strange. They're all behaving in a natural manner because something supernatural has happened, and they can't understand it. Mary Magdalene sees the stones rolled away, and she thinks that's got to mean somebody broke into the tomb and probably took the body. It doesn't say she went in to confirm that at first, but she just ran and went to everybody and said, they took the body. Peter and John chase after her. A note about Peter's alleged girth. He was a little slower than John running to the tomb. But they get there, and they look in the tomb, and they conclude, somebody took the body. It's gone. But the body hasn't been taken in actuality. There are angels there. And they tell them that this body, this Jesus, has been brought back to life. How can this be? How is that possible? Dead people die and stay dead. How is it possible? Because it's a new day. This is Resurrection Day. This is the first day. Mary meets Jesus himself in the garden, but can't recognize him. Again, why is it she could see someone that she followed and knew so well? Was his body so emaciated by crucifixion that he was unrecognizable, even in his resurrected self? And you say, oh, no, he got a new body. I'm sure it was perfect. No, well, let me just go with me here for a minute. Later on in this chapter, he is showing Thomas the holes in his hands from the spikes they drove him to the cross with. He's showing him the hole in his side from the spear that the soldiers put into him after he was dead. So his resurrected body bore the scars of everything that he had gone through to get where he was. So that maybe tells us, maybe those scars, you know, we think of scars as something unsightly. You know, go see a plastic surgeon. Let's get this scar taken away from us. Maybe on Jesus' body, scars are a badge of honor. This is what I went through. To follow God, to follow my Father, all the way to the grave through suffering and death. And so I bear these scars, even to the point of being unrecognizable to the people who should recognize me the most. The fact that the gardener's there, or she thinks he's a gardener there on a Sunday morning, that might seem a little strange to us. You know, Sunday's the weekend for us, right? Usually at the parks. The tenders of the parks don't show up on a Sunday morning, but got to remember it's a different society. Their holy day is Saturday. So it would be really odd to see the gardener there on Saturday morning, but for them, it was kind of the way we look at Monday. It was just another manic Monday, and then in the morning, she comes in and sees the gardener working because everybody works on Sunday in this society back in the day. Except this isn't a gardener. This is Jesus. And in the Gospel of John, Jesus' body bears the scars of his crucifixion. But it was logical. See, I'm letting Mary off the hook here for not recognizing him, somebody that she should know. It's a new day. It's the first day. And Jesus, once dead, is alive. When people die, it's understood that they won't come back. And it's common sense for Mary and the disciples to not believe that he is risen back to life. Ever since the Garden of Eden, when people first became mortal, however that happened, in what year, as encountered in Scripture, people were exiled from the garden, and people who were created to be immortal beings were suddenly mortal beings. And I think that's something that's still in us. When somebody dies, we think this shouldn't be, especially if they die young, especially if they die healthy. It shouldn't be. People shouldn't be dying, and it feels wrong. It's no coincidence that the first stage of grief, or one of the first stages of grief, is denial. It's like, this can't be. I can't believe this is true. It's because we want to live forever, and we think we should. It's built right into us. This seems wrong. And losing a loved one causes immense sadness. And in our grief, if you've ever lost someone close to you, and I'm guessing if you've been on this earth long enough, you have, you would wish that this person would come back. Maybe you start having dreams that they've come back. Maybe you start kind of seeing them. I've talked to so many people who have lost loved ones, and it's kind of peculiar. They get this feeling like that person's in the room over there. You know, it might be just memory, whatever it is, they feel like that person's still here, even though they were there at the funeral, even though they saw them getting buried. There's like a sense that they're still with them. And I remember when my father died in 1999, I kept having dreams about him being alive and I could talk to him. And, you know, that was 23 years ago next week. How elated I would be to have him standing here before me. And that's the way that the disciples felt seeing Jesus again. They saw him in the flesh. As you read on in John, they touched his flesh, touched his sides. You see Mary Magdalene just wanting to give him a hug, but he says, not yet. And I don't understand that. But this is just profoundly illogical. This is not rational, but it's a new day. This is the first day, and life and death will never be the same. If you believe that Jesus rose from the dead, bodily rose from the dead, he was a human being with blood and flesh and lived and died, and then came back to life in blood and flesh, and has a new body that lives forever. If you believe that, then really anything's possible, isn't it? The laws of physics and science, they are important and they're useful, but they can't explain this. They can't explain everything. Logic is very useful in balancing your checkbook, but it is not going to explain the death and resurrection of Jesus. At this point, it's a new day where logic has reached its limits, and there's something greater. The natural realm can only explain so much, and there's the supernatural to explain that which is dead, he who was dead, has risen again. And if you put your faith and trust in that, it gives you a hope, as Deb explained. It gives you a hope that can help you through the roughest times. In 1 Corinthians 15, verse 55, Paul writes, death, where, O death, is your sting? Where, O death, is your victory? In 1 Thessalonians 4, it's written, we do not want you to be uninformed, brothers and sisters, about those who have died, so that you may not grieve as others do who have no hope. So, for since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so, through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have died. So, when I do funerals, I can read this. There's hope for you, even in the midst of death. Not that it isn't sad. Not that this isn't just causing you to be torn apart inside. I never deny that which is bad about being a human being. That which causes us to suffer and have pain. I never deny those things. They're very real They hurt. And our purpose is to comfort. But so many times, I'm offering comfort to people who have, in spite of what they've just seen, hope that because Jesus died and rose again, that someday, even though their loved one died, they will rise again. And even though someday they're going to die, and we're all going to die someday, we can be risen again through the grace and the power of Jesus Christ. Why? Because of the laws of nature? No. Because it's a new day. The first day. Jesus has triumphed over death. Let's live in the power of that triumph.